This week on Vaticano, embark on a spiritual journey with Pope Francis during Lent and stand in solidarity with the Holy Land's Christian community. Meet Mama Antula, Argentina's first female saint, and explore the restoration of the world's most famous altar. For this and more, Vaticano starts now. As Easter approaches, Pope Francis is preparing spiritually as he undertakes the Lenten journey with the Roman Curia inside the Vatican. For this reason, the weekly general audiences and meetings have been canceled to allow the Holy Father and his brother cardinals to take time for reflection. The tradition of Lenten spiritual exercises continues with an invitation from Pope Francis to the cardinals in Rome, the heads of dicasteries, and officials of the Roman Curia. He's urging them to join in the spirit, dedicating this sacred time to prayer and preparation for Easter. This year's retreat underscores a message of unity and introspection, a pause from official duties, including the general audience on Wednesday. The focus shifts to spiritual renewal. It echoes the Pope's dedication to prayer and contemplation. In this time of quiet and reflection, Pope Francis, in his Lenten message, is inviting everyone to use this time to act, but to act which also means to pause in prayer, to receive the Word of God, and to see the brothers and sisters in need.
Numerous wars at present. Syria, Iraq, Palestine, Afghanistan, Ukraine. Still ravaged by a seemingly endless war. All those wars and conflicts without a name, scattered throughout the world, that have shed and continue to shed blood on every continent and throughout the centuries. Just like Jerusalem and the Holy Land, we cannot forget, and neither can our societies. They need peace and reconciliation.
In the heart of the Holy Land, streets once bustling with life now lie empty. Shops are shuttered, silent witnesses to the turmoil that has engulfed this sacred place. Amidst this desolation, the Christian community, a vibrant minority of 55,000 in the West Bank and East Jerusalem, finds itself at a crossroads. Traditionally anchored in the tourism industry, their livelihoods have been upended. The war has brought a halt to tourism, the lifeline for many. Families are now facing uncertainty, their incomes having vanished overnight. In a show of solidarity, Monsignor Pietro Bongiovanni opened the doors of his church, San Salvatore in Lauro in Rome, for a special collection dedicated to the Christian families enduring these hard times in the Holy Land.
The Madonna, between her arms, has two sons. One, Jesus Christ, the Son of God. The other is a beloved son, which is the Church of Jerusalem. The Church of Jerusalem, the Church of the Land of Jesus, so tormented in recent years, and particularly in this period, we want to implore tonight on behalf of our brothers, where Jesus walked and lived. The precious gift of peace was given.
This collection is the first in a series of initiatives in Rome to support Christians in the Holy Land. On the first Sunday of Lent, the whole Italian church will join in a collection for the Holy Land, and the worldwide collection will take place on Holy Friday. Cardinal Fernando Filoni and the Knights and Dames of the Order of the Holy Sepulchre of Jerusalem will manage and distribute the collection to the church and families in the Holy Land.
I want to thank you all for your generosity. And please take with you this prayer that we have been reciting, and remember to recite it every day until peace comes to the Holy Land.
Mm-hmm.
Hello and welcome to this week's Vaticano Updates, the most important news from the Holy Father and the Vatican. It is one of the most deeply rooted traditions for Lent in Rome. Pope Francis presided over Ash Wednesday Mass on the Aventine Hill. After the penitential procession had arrived to the Basilica of Santa Sabina, the Holy Father blessed the ashes that were distributed later to the faithful. Santa Sabina is the first of the Lenten Station churches here in Rome. During the General Assembly of the Pontifical Academy for Life at the Vatican, Pope Francis stressed the importance of integrating the resources of science and technology while promoting the human being in his or her irreducible specificity. The Pontifical Academy for Life was established by Pope John Paul II in 1994 to promote and defend life. Concrete actions. Pope Francis urged people to bring God's love to the sick and suffering, not with words, but with deeds. In his Angelus address on the Feast of Our Lady of Lourdes, he reminded those present to be a neighbor to those who suffer. We should visit the sick as Jesus teaches us in the Gospel, the Holy Father emphasized. The Catholic Church marks the World Day of the Sick each year on February 11th. They do not just stand by and watch when faced with evil. Pope Francis thanked police officers who work in St. Peter's Square for their faithful and patient work. He said that the dark side of our human nature requires a response from individuals who take up responsibility. These officers are employed by the Italian state and are charged with maintaining order in St. Peter's Square. On April 28th, Pope Francis will travel to Venice. During his one-day pastoral visit to the northern Italian city, the Pope will make a stop at the 60th International Art Exhibition of La Biennale di Venezia in 2024 and visit the Holy See Pavilion of the exhibit in the Giudecca Women's Prison. Thank you for watching this week's Vaticano Updates. My name is Andreas Tonhauser for EWTN Vaticano.
When we return, we'll discover the story of Argentina's first female saint.
E oggi pensiamo a Maria Antonia de San José Mamantula.
We reflect on the life of Maria Antonia de San José, Mama Antula. She was a wayfarer of the spirits. She traveled thousands of miles on foot, crossing deserts and dangerous roads in order to bring God to others. Today, she is a model of fervor and apostolic courage.
Even the Argentinian president traveled to Rome for the historic canonization. The recently elected Javier Milei was present in St. Peter's Basilica when Pope Francis raised the first Argentinian woman to the altars on February the 11th. The name of the new saint, Maria Antonia de Paz y Figueroa, also called Mama Antula. Born in Argentina in 1730, Maria Antonia decided as a young girl to live a life devoted to God. She got to know the Jesuits. Her spirituality was influenced by this religious order, which had been founded only 200 years prior by Saint Ignatius of Loyola.
Sua Eccellenza l'Arcivescovo di Buenos Aires.
Just how important the canonization is for the country of Argentina was summed up by the postulator for the cause, Silvia Monica Correale, just a few days before the canonization.
Sono molto contenta.
I'm very happy to be here as a postulator at this moment, especially in a cause like that of Maria Antonia de Paz y Figueroa, who is a very important role model for every Argentinian woman.
The young woman from Argentina embarked on the path to sainthood early on. At the age of 15, Maria Antonia donned a black robe and took private vows. She took the name of Maria Antonia of St. Joseph and began to lead a life in community together with other consecrated women.
She was undoubtedly a laywoman, wasn't she? I think it's good to point this out because in the pictures and images of Mama Antula, she sometimes doesn't appear dressed like a laywoman. The laity play an important role in the church. They are part of the family of God. They need to be listened to more. I therefore think that the way of synodality initiated by Pope Francis is important for us.
In 1767, the Jesuits were expelled from Argentina. The entire order was banned by Pope Clement XIV just 6 years later. During this time, Mama Antula traveled from city to city to offer retreats in the Ignatian tradition. She said that she wanted to go, quote, where people don't know God yet.
She was a woman who had an impressive faith because she trusted completely in Providence. And I would say that almost everything she did happened out of the blue. The Lord gave her the help she needed through certain people.
In only 8 years, Mama Antula provided retreats to 70,000 people. Pope Francis praised her passion for spreading the gospel.
Thanks to Mama Antula, this saint, intercessor of divine providence, made his way through houses, neighborhoods, public transport, stores, factories, and hearts in order to offer a dignified life through work, justice, and daily bread on the table of the poor.
After evangelizing in Uruguay as well, Mama Antula founded a house for retreats in Buenos Aires, where she died in 1799. Nothing stood in the way of the canonization of Mama Antula when the church recognized the miracle of Claudio Peruzzini's healing. Claudio was born in 1959 and suffered a stroke with severe internal hemorrhaging in several areas. A deep coma followed, and multi-organ failure quickly set in. According to the doctors, Claudio was doomed to die, but then a miracle occurred. Thanks to the intercession of Mama Antula, Claudio was cured, and with the help of physical therapy, he can now live a largely normal life.
Mama Antula is obviously a woman who is gripped by the love of God and always keeps an eye for the suffering of other people. She has experienced slavery, marginalization, the contempt of many, and has shown her closeness to the marginalized. The love of God is a gift that transforms and changes lives.
The feast day of Argentina's first female saint will be March the 7th, just before International Women's Day. Silvia Correale, the postulator from Argentina, is convinced the canonization of Mama Antula is also a signal for all women worldwide.
She highlights that every woman can leave a mark for many generations, in a society and also in the church. A woman can do a lot of good if she responds generously to the Lord's call, because each of us has a vocation in life. If we follow the Lord, as our mother, Mantula, did, we will surely leave a mark and exercise our spiritual motherhood in a truly authentic way.
My own journey, my own swim across the Tiber was a long one. Not so much in terms of the time, but in the need to transform my own mentality, to transform my own heart.
Welcome to this next edition of Roman Nights.
On February the 11th, the EWTN Vatican Bureau hosted its 12th edition of Roman Nights at the Pontifical North American College in Rome to discuss the topic of conversion.
Full of noises, so we have, as you say, to discipline ourselves.
Three panelists were invited to share their personal conversion stories and discuss the need for daily conversion.
Lord, and I was sitting.
One of them was William Robbins, a convert and seminarian for the Diocese of Beaumont in the United States.
I went through a conversion process there, so I was raised in a Lutheran family, and we were a faithful family in a warm home. We went to church on Sundays, but I really didn't encounter Catholicism until entering high school at Kelly High School. And there were three people there that were instrumental in that. The first was Sister Emily Bordash, a Dominican sister who taught there for 40 years. The second were a bunch of my peers through a teen Acts retreat in my now home parish. And the third was our Lord in the Blessed Sacrament.
William eventually received the sacraments of initiation, becoming a member of the Catholic Church. After briefly working in the family business and Texas politics, William felt called to another type of conversion.
He called me at that point about 10 years before that to turn and follow him into the church. here it is again. He's telling me to turn, to convert, and follow him. And I started meeting with my pastor and talking with our vocation director, with some friends, and entered the seminary.
You know, it's in that kind of dirty, confusing.
In a similar manner, Father Michael Baggett, a bioethics professor at the Pontifical Athenaeum Regina Apostolorum in Rome and research scholar at the UNESCO Chair in Bioethics and Human Rights, shared his radical conversion story.
And I had grown up as an agnostic. I was open to the possibility of there being a God, but he had no role whatsoever in my life and my daily decisions.
Father Michael Baggett eventually started to ask himself deeper questions about the meaning of life and life after death. Slowly, he started to perceive a convergence of reasons to believe in a creator.
I think I discovered him first through the beauty of creation. I sensed that maybe there's some sort of creator, a designer, a divine artist who's behind this beauty. I was not willing to just attribute it to the being the random byproduct of blind chance forces. I thought there's something more behind this.
The word conversion has traditionally been used to describe the return of the sinner to a life of virtue lived in pursuit of God.
And so I discovered a much deeper level of conversion.
Anna Raisa Favale, an Italian director and screenwriter, shared her thoughts on the need for this daily conversion.
And I think this is a daily conversion each of us has to make, because we're always looking for something else. Like, my life is good, but I would be completely happy if this would happen. I would be completely happy. And that means that we are not converted yet completely. That means that the Lord is not living completely in us, and he cannot really also perform miracles. And sometimes I think we are like this. We want to control some things of our life. We want to do our way. It really is to just let go of ever any claim of control over my life, and to be completely, completely open, and just not even asking God why. Just, I trust you, God.
The panelists emphasized the power of silence, and especially that of the Eucharistic presence, to facilitate the lifelong process of daily conversion. Reflecting on the faith of the first apostles and recalling the words of Peter to the risen Christ outside Rome, Domine, quo vadis? Lord, where are you going? William Robbins argued that God asks us too, where we are going every day.
He's encountering the Lord again. And he has an option. Do I walk away, where Christ is walking back to Rome to be crucified again? Or do I turn and do I walk with the Lord? And that is what we're called to do every day. The Lord is coming to us in every moment of our life and saying, you know, calling us by name, Will, where are you going? Will you follow me? And we are called to say, yes, Lord, I will walk with you. I will follow you. And, you know, there are big conversions in our lives, but there are also little small ones every single day where we say, yes, Lord, I'm with you.
After a short break, we'll bring you inside St. Peter's Basilica, and you'll see the world's most famous altar. Almost 29 meters tall, weighing an estimated 63 tons, the baldachin stands as a testament to art and history within St. Peter's Basilica. For the Jubilee year 2025, St. Peter's Basilica's main altar and its baldachin, Bernini's masterpiece, will be fully restored. Announced by Cardinal Mauro Gambetti, Archpriest of St. Peter's Basilica.
Il baldacchino ha la sua importanza.
The baldachin fulfills its main function in focusing the gaze and also the gesture of the faithful on Peter's tomb, on Peter's confession. It is like a large curtain that indicates the presence. Through Peter's faith, the presence is Jesus, who on the altar still comes to us today.
ecco, viene a noi ancora oggi.
The baldachin, as tall as a 10-story building, can be seen from any point in the basilica, and it represents the axis around which the entire architecture of the basilica revolves. This necessary restoration is being undertaken for the first time in a systematic and complete manner, 250 years after the significant 18th century restorations, and 400 years after the start of the work on the baldachin. The project will cost $768,000 and is being funded entirely by the Knights of Columbus in a spirit of service to the Church and the Pope, as their Supreme Knight, Patrick Kelly, explains.
The Knights of Columbus is primarily a charitable organization. We do so much local charity, but we're also in service to the Church. So when the opportunity came up for us to collaborate on the restoration of the baldacchino, it was an easy decision to make, precisely because it's Bernini's baldacchino. It's the central iconic part of the Vatican Basilica. So that's why we chose to do it, really to be in union with the Holy See, in union with the Church.
St. Peter's Basilica will welcome millions of faithful and pilgrims for the 2025 Jubilee, an event that has profound value for every Christian.
The Jubilee is a door of hope to give back to every person his dignity, his original beauty, and to make each person able to live relationships with others and to live within the world in peace.
In pace.
The Jubilee is a unique occasion of hope and renewal for the faithful, a time also to reconnect with the Church.
I think we all know we live in difficult times, but I think it's important to be reconnected to the Church. I think it's important to renew our faith. And so that's also one of the reasons why the Knights of Columbus have taken on this project, because it's so many people will come and be inspired by the refreshed, the restored baldacchino.
The Jubilee will not be the only major event concerning St. Peter's Basilica and its canopy. In fact, in 2026, another important anniversary will be celebrated.
We must also see this restoration in the perspective of another great event that we will have to celebrate in the Vatican Basilica, which will not be during the Holy Year of 2025, but will be in 2026. That year marks the 400th anniversary of the dedication of the Basilica, which, as is known, was dedicated on November 18, 1626, by Pope Urban VIII Barberini.
Dal Papa Urbano VIII Barberini.
The provisional work and work on the construction site will not hinder the celebration of papal ceremonies on the main altar. The projected time for the restoration is expected to be 10 months.